Hello? Hi. They are working on my technology as we speak. It may be coming up now, but given time, I'm going to go ahead and get started while they are fixing up my PowerPoint, hopefully. And I am ready to go. Okay. Thank you all for coming out. My name is Allison Levin. I primarily study how social media can be used in all sorts of environments, but particularly looking at sports and the impact that social media is having on sort of the changing nature of sports. Whether we use Twitter or not, we know, or social media or not, we know that it's starting to have a huge influence. We see across the board players in the NFL getting in trouble for things they've posted on social media. We've had instances of baseball players getting in trouble, but we also see that there's some positive coming from that. So what we're going to talk about today is how baseball may be able to use social media to generate that new younger base of fans, which Rob Manfred has stated is very important to the continuation of baseball being America's pastime. Recent Twitter statistics suggest that their largest base of users are people ages 13 to 25. So those are the younger generation, the people we want to entice into baseball. So it's clear that we could potentially use Twitter to move baseball forward. For this presentation, we're going to start off by looking at some of my previous work, looking at Twitter and sports. And then we're going to discuss both hashtags and mentions in the context of Twitter and the 2014 World Series. And then we're going to look specifically at some of the things that happened in the 2014 World Series to gain an understanding of how, you know, we can use Twitter to promote a younger generation of fans. And then finally, discuss sort of the future of this study and also how this research can be implemented in the real world. So last year I looked at the 2013 World Series. The reason I did that was I was interested in seeing, you know, how do fans use us Twitter during the World Series. There were some serious limitations to the study, though. The first was is that I started with the top 10 hashtags that had trended during the World Series. And this ended up being a fairly problematic situation because I only was able to access tweets that used those specific hashtags, which meant that I got 25,000 tweets over the entire series. In context, when I used this year's thing, I got over 72,000 tweets about the World Series. So I was clearly missing a large number of tweets, including those of fans who simply don't hashtag, which is quite a few during the game. I'm getting to that. From this study, many questions remained, and that was, why did people use hashtags? What about those people who didn't use them? Where were those tweets? Why did these 10 hashtags trend? And what could be done to generate fan support as the hashtags were ineffective in doing so? Now, to answer the question, let's talk about these various terms. First, hashtags. Communication research suggests that people use hashtags for two reasons. A hashtag, quite simply, is the pound symbol with a set of words after it. On Twitter, that's a way to search. It's a way to take all of the tweets out there and type in a specific topic that you want to look at. So if you use that to narrow down Twitter to find people who are talking about the same activity you are. And the research suggests that people do this for two reasons. The first is to be part of a community. Now, this research developed out of television and movies. And where this really started is a lot of sort of those guilty pleasure shows that maybe we don't want to admit to our friends we watch or we don't have a huge fan base with. But all of a sudden, you know, your favorite character dies, or there's a cliffhanger, or your top American Idol contestant is on the bubble and freaking out. People go to Twitter in the communication world with the hashtag to find like-minded people who are theorizing about the final shot in the final season or last season of Game of Thrones, and is, no spoilers, that character still alive? So people form a community of people who are talking about the same thing. The other way Twitter is used is to resolve uncertainty. This is very common when we have, quite simply, confusion. When there is a crisis, a terror attack, an earthquake, even in the context of TV, if again, going to some of those cliffhangers, if we simply don't know what is going on, the younger generation will go to Twitter to try to understand, to clarify. And those are some of the most common ways that people use Twitter based on the communication research. So we see that from my previous research, sports fans use Twitter in much the same way, but the biggest way that they use it is to resolve uncertainty. And what we mean by that is fans will go on Twitter when something strange happens. For example, in the 2013 World Series, when we had, for those of you who are familiar with them, we had the obstruction call that ended Game 3 of the World Series. Alan Craig was diving back into third base, ball ricocheted off of him. The umpire ruled that the third baseman blocked his way, and he scored the winning run. Baseball diehards were having trouble understanding that rule and what was going on. And we saw a huge spike in hashtags trying to clarify and understand what happened. Baseball fans do also use Twitter to form a community, but it's a little different than in the TV world. It's more about bragging rights. It's the thing that you would do when you are sitting there with your friends at the game or watching TV, and you say, nothing good ever happens when you walk the pitcher. Or, you know, never make the first or third out at third base. You know, it's that sort of bragging rights. You post that on Twitter with the hashtag, and then, you know, when you're right, look at me. I know what I'm doing. So that's sort of how we see hashtags used. Mentions are the other thing that shows up, and this is what was lacking from my 2013 study. And mentions are quite interesting because they're different from hashtags in quite a few ways. The first is that there are tweets that start with an at instead of the pound sign. An at simply means that you're talking directly to the user. So rather than just joining a community, you're responding to a particular user. You're speaking directly to that person. And they actually get a notification that you've talked to them. So this changes the scenario. Rather than just joining a community, now we're talking to somebody. And this can take several different forms. It can simply be retweeting, in other words, reposting a tweet that somebody said, saying, I agree with this statement. Or, hey, everybody who I'm friends with, this is really cool. You need to watch this. You need to learn about this. But as we get more comfortable, mentions can take another form. They can be us talking to people. And this is when we get very comfortable. This is when we start telling broadcasters, media personality, how dumb they are, how bad their coverage is, everything that's wrong with the world. So as I said, now when we use the word influencers, Twitter influencers are the people whose posts generate the most discussion. So the people whose posts are at it the most. So those are people who either responded to or retweeted. Those are people who, for whatever reason, we value their opinion and their posts, and to some extent, we feel comfortable enough to talk directly to them. This all stems from a communications theory which is called parasocial relationships. And this is a little bit strange, but it's the idea that we develop relationships with people or characters that we're likely never to meet. Without going into the baseball context, this is the idea of if you've ever felt emotional when your favorite character dies in a book, or on a TV show, or a movie, or you feel like you know somebody, you know, that you follow or that you see on TV, and you feel sorry for them, or you are happy for them. You have emotions that are equivalent to being friends with them, or feeling like you care about them, but yet you've never met them. And in some cases, they're fictional. This is actually a phenomenon that we see happen quite a bit. If you think back to Harry Potter and some of those things, when some of the major characters died, major newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal, had to post articles of how to explain to your child that X died in the book. That's because people formed a relationship with that character and they would be heartbroken. We develop parasocial relationships with teams and players somewhat inherently through fanaticism. What other world would we refer to players, managers, general managers by their first names? You would never walk into your place of appointment and go to the CEO and be like, "Hey Theo, how's it going?" But yet, we talk about Theo, we talk about Mo. You know, Cardinal fan, you know, I don't ever refer to the players by their last, I rarely refer to the players by their last names. It's Yadi. You know, Buster and Yadi are in a race for the catcher position in the NL. That's a parasocial relationship. We would not feel comfortable in most situations referring to these people by their first names. Yet, we hear all about Theo, not Mr. Epstein. Social media makes this even easier. As teams, players, and organizations get on social media, they build these relationships. What happens is they give a glimpse into their personal life. In the old days, or not necessarily old days, but previously, we were given the perfect image of the players. The team and the media controlled what we saw. We saw nice gentlemen in suits, getting on and off trains, getting on and off planes, and we were hidden from what was really going on behind the scenes. We don't live in that world anymore. People want unfettered access. And so players and others are starting to understand that, and they are posting on their own social media pages and giving us insight into their lives. And this can be ridiculous things. This can be pictures of their kids, pictures of what they're doing. John Axford is famous for live tweeting The Bachelorette. Bryce Harper gives movie quotes. But it's about when we start to feel like we could be friends with them, or we understand with them, we form that parasocial relationship. And this portrays even more when we think in the big picture. We have a choice what TV station we watch for our baseball coverage. Do we go to ESPN? Do we go to MLB? Do we stay on Fox after the World Series? When we have 50 different people telling us the same thing, who do we believe? Who do we choose to follow? And that's where that parasocial relationship comes in. So this project built upon the limitations of the 2013 study, and I collected as many tweets as possible for 2014, and we used super broad search terms. From this, I ended up with 12 million tweets. As you look from the search terms, you can easily see that some of these are very broad. And so once we were done, we were able to clean the tweets down to a little over 72,000. That removed duplicates as well as tweets that had nothing to do with baseball. And as you look at this list, you can see how that is quite possible. Crown, got a lot of Crown Royal. Giants, there's a lot of Giants teams in Japan. Postseason, guess what? There were a lot of postseasons going on at the same time. So we got a lot of tweets, but as we cleaned it down, we got there. And there were some interesting things that we can see. For clarification purposes, the green line is the mention only. So people who only used an at. The orange is a mention which also included a hashtag. So they responded to somebody as well as joined a community. The yellow is somebody who posted just with a hashtag, i.e. they just joined a community. And the blue is they posted just a tweet with no mention or hashtag. And we can see some interesting things here. During the day, which is actually defined as 3 a.m. to 6 p.m. because of the East Coast time, I wanted to extend it so we got the post-game in the night period. In the day, the pregame, which is 6 p.m. to the game start, and after the game, we saw people more likely to engage on social media by using replies. So they were responding to people. They were talking to people. They were engaging through parasocial relationships. But as my previous research demonstrated, during the game, people don't have time for that. People are either just tweeting, or they're tweeting to be part of that community to say, hey, I belong, or to sort of tout their knowledge. When we look at the overall mentions, and these are the top 10 people who had at to them, so the people directly communicated with them, we see a couple things. First is the top five actually represented over 90% of the overall mentions. So we see a big disparity, and some of that is because this idea of mentions and influencers is fairly new to the research. But we can see a couple things that give us some insight in how we can move forward. The first is, as we look at the top five, we're seeing very clearly that these are organizations that can impact baseball, that have a vested interest in the sport and baseball. We've got Major League Baseball, the two teams in the World Series, SportsCenter, as well as Buster Olney of ESPN, who was one of the top individuals who were mentioned. And then as we move on, we're also seeing some of the MLB organizations and some of the stats and videos popping up. The last one is a Giants beat writer who posted some very interesting inside information regarding the Giants. These people were typically responded to or mentioned for several key reasons. The first is they provided very interesting history and statistics. Things that the average fan did not necessarily know. So they engaged people by having people go, huh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. And then people would share or respond. They also, as we talked about with the parasocial relationship, often posted videos with behind-the-scenes information. So pictures or videos of the players on the team playing, in the locker room, hanging out, interviews, things that were more exclusive that gave us a look inside the history, what was going on. They also posted player stories, interviews, and sometimes had contests that built upon fanaticism of both Royals and Giants fans, as well as just baseball fans in general. So they engaged the user. These users also had enough of a relationship with their fans that people felt comfortable enough to comment and complain. And we saw this a lot, especially at the MLB and the MLB on Fox, as well as SportsCenter. People really weren't necessarily happy with Joe Buck. A lot of people didn't like Harold Reynolds in the booth, Aaron Andrews. Interviewing people during at-bats wasn't so popular. Some of the pregame analysts who didn't really have much to say weren't so popular. So people complained. They spoke out because they felt comfortable enough. Their product was being changed. When we look at hashtags, i.e. joining the conversation, we see a different situation. And hashtags are very tricky because they're case sensitive. So you can see that if we don't put them in exactly, they're not going to show up. It should come as no surprise to anybody if you've been following the 2015 All-Star Game voting that Royals fans are fairly active on social media. So they had the number one overall hashtag with Royals, number three with Take the Crown. The Giants were in one of the more interesting situations, which is their hashtags were kind of spread out. Their official Twitter name is @SFGiants, whereas almost every other baseball team is @Royals, @Cardinals, @Pirates. The reason this is because the New York football Giants got @Giants before the baseball Giants did. So San Francisco fans sort of split the hashtags. So we see SF Giants as well as Giants. Some other interesting things is number 10, October Together, which is the sort of key Giants motto, ends up in number 10 because the Giants sent mixed signals. They changed their name on Twitter, the name that pops up, not their at part, but the bold name that shows up, to Orange October. But yet they encouraged fans to use October Together, which caused a little bit of confusion. Both the 2013 and 14 projects do demonstrate that fans of particular teams form communities around specific sayings or the Twitter team and hashtag, and that the fans of baseball tend to use those more general hashtags. Some quick game-by-game observations is, as I said, broadcaster names will tend to trend as hashtags when fans are unhappy and need an outlet. So they'll trend as a mention as fans feel like they can tell the broadcasters what they're doing wrong. Authors with interesting takes or exclusive interviews will trend as their stories are hot. So we saw, for example, a Wall Street Journal article trend for about 24 hours when they had some very interesting insights into the World Series. We also see day-by-day trends when people have compelling stories. The most compelling of the 2014 World Series was Tim Hudson leading up to Game 7. For those who aren't familiar, he had never won a World Series, and people were rooting for him. He started the game, did not pitch great, but Auburn Baseball, where he played, was the top mention for that day and the pregame as Auburn was really excited. And for those of you who followed college football, it should come as no surprise that they all showed up with their War Eagle hashtags to support that cause. So what we can see from this is that if we can engage people through mentions, if those top Twitter users can engage fans through interesting videos, through interesting posts, which go out virally, fans can go to Twitter and join, be enticed to watch the game. An example I'll use really quickly is the NBA Finals. A lot of people were not NBA basketball fans, but you saw Riley Cooper, who was adorable in the press conference, and then I started hearing about the stories, so I tuned into a couple games. So what we saw is we've got some general things. So as people follow things like SportsCenter and stuff, as we post in the off-season interesting stories, videos, we get people to follow those accounts, whether they're baseball fans or for SportsCenter, MLB, Fox, other sports fans, we can then entice them into the game. And through that, through the use of hashtags to form the community to get answers, they can learn about the game. This may seem somewhat idealistic, but the research is clearly showing that we're going there. There's a couple steps that still need to be done. This data set was, as I said, very, very large. And there's a few more answers that I'm looking to find here, which is I want to start to understand how the elements of the top mentioned user tweets vary from other tweets. So I plan to do some coding of the key terms to determine what makes those special. The second is I have the information, and I'd like to determine, based on age, gender, and location, what are there certain are there certain types of people? How do people tweet? Does it change by gender, age, location? And then from that, it seems that MLB and other people could perhaps adapt tweets to bring in certain audiences. And then finally, I would like to determine if, as the data implied, that influencers that drive hashtags are different than those that were most frequently mentioned. Hashtags tended to be driven by more of the celebrity account, i.e. Paul Rudd, Olivia Wilde, Billy Crystal, Steve Perry, celebrities who are fans of the game, whereas the other tweets, the mentions, were developed by the influencers. So with that, I think we can see that that this information is just now developing, but that we can use, influencers could use their relationship with their followers to encourage the followers to try something new, to tune into a baseball game. And we're already seeing this when we get information about history being broken. A-Rod's about to hit his 3,000th hit, or Scherzer is going into a perfect game. That information drives people to see history. People like seeing history. And that's how these influencer accounts can attract people. And then through hashtags, we can teach people about the games. And lest people be confused, remember, we're talking about mostly 13 to 25-year-old users. They know how Twitter works. They know hashtags. They know how to join communities. So they will be able to seek out that information in a way that other people would not. So based on my research, I believe that it is very possible that a combination of influencers and hashtags can help bring and maintain young fans into sports. As I said, my research is going to continue to develop a more thorough model, but I do think this is the future of baseball and the future of bringing fans into the sport. Thank you, and I've got a few minutes for questions if anybody has any. Any questions? Okay, have fun. Go Cardinals.